the theme for this month, you may remember, is the interpretation of a sacred text is true if it stirs you to hope, activity, and awe. And actually, that word awe, it deserves a little comment, because I went back to look at the Persian, and I realized that awe is, that I was fudging it a little bit, because awe is not, it actually, the word is almost means something like bashfulness, you know, kind of, it's an interesting relationship to the divine. Modesty is not quite it. Shame is not quite it, because it's not negative, but it's not just awe, like, oh God, you are so majestic. It's like, it has quality of being in ourselves that lacks, that is without any presumption, and that is fully aware of our responsibility toward the divine. And it caused me to reflect on how presumptuous we are, and how little do we, in a positive sense, in a very positive way, not in a shamed way, not in an erotic way, but in a positive way, feel our nothingness in relationship to the divine. So I'm going to pass this out. I hope you have enough. Give me one more for Camille, actually. Interpretation of a sacred text. Is true if it stirs you to hope, activity, and modest awe. And if it makes you slacken your service, know the real truth to be this, that it's a distortion of the sense of the saying, not a true interpretation. And this saying has come down to inspire you to serve, that God may take the hands of those who have lost hope and deliver them. Of course, this is all from Rumi, and that should be obvious, but it's not. It's from Book 5 of the Mesnevi. This saying has come down to inspire you to serve, that God may take the hands of those who have lost hope and deliver them. Ask the meaning of the Quran from the Quran alone, and from that one who set fire to his idle fancy and extinguished it, and has become a sacrifice to the Quran, bowing low in humbleness, so that the Quran has become the essence of his spirit, that essential oil that has wholly devoted itself to the rose. You can smell either that oil or the rose as you please. Hope, as it's commonly experienced, is a disease. It's called the disease of tomorrow. It's a form of sleep. Most come help for find some chairs for our beloveds here. Did we have any extra? And let's put on the dining room light, so we have a bit more light for the friends back to. Bring some chairs a little closer from behind. We're not in any rush. So we're talking about hope. And I said that hope, as is commonly understood, is a disease. Tomorrow. I'll get around to it. Tomorrow I will, you know, strengthen my spiritual practice. Tomorrow I will find my discipline. Tomorrow I will do what I don't feel like doing today, maybe. That's not the kind of hope that's talked about here. And this is really important to understand. As Mevlana says, ask the meaning of the Quran from the Quran alone. Okay, well, that's... that goes in the face of what a lot of people are saying today, which you don't even have a right to interpret the Quran unless you have certain degrees from certain institutions, etc., etc., unless you know this madhab, that madhab. I know I'm being controversial, but so is Mevlana. Ask the meaning of the Quran from the Quran alone. Yes, it doesn't mean any idiot, any ignorant person can just start interpreting based on their own whims. But that's why we have the first two lines. The interpretation of a sacred text is true if it stirs you to hope, activity, and awe. And the hope is not the hope that is the disease of tomorrow, but the hope that leads you to action right now. This conscious hope is, if there is such a thing as conscious hope, it's what awakens us to act. To do. Hope. I did a little study. I was reading up on some of what the various Sufi and religious teachers say about hope. And hope at the level of religion, hope at the level of Sharia, goes something like this. I'm going to pray and do all the proper practices with the hope that I will not be overly punished for my sins. I'm going to do such and such, and maybe God won't punish me. Maybe I will be rewarded with something beautiful in heaven, maybe even in this life. That's hope at the level of Sharia, the level of religion, of any religion. Hope at the level of tariqa, at the level of the esoteric path, is something like this. This is not some kind of dogma or doctrine, but hope at the level of tariqa, at the level that we're working, is that I'm going to do my best to awaken, to be conscious, to be aware, in order that my nafs will not get the better of me, in order that I won't be so asleep that I will stumble into foolish and actions, negative thoughts, judgmental thoughts, etc. So at the level of tariqa, it's all about consciousness and awareness. And that's what we're working on mostly. This is sort of the basics of what we're doing, of what we can do. It's not that we discard the first level I mentioned, but there's something subtler going on, because we understand that our hope is in awakening awareness. Without that, we are just following almost automatically outer morals and ethics. It's good to do that. Outer beliefs. But without awareness, without real consciousness. So the spiritual path is about awakening awareness. At the level of tariqa, it's doing all the practices and using the knowledge that leads the human being to self-awareness and awareness in relationship, which is also adab. That's hope at the level of tarika. Hope at the level of hakika. Hope at the level of reality, of truth, is to be freed of self. That is, to be free of the nafs, the false self, everything that impedes the manifestation of divine attributes, of divine intelligence, of divine qualities. We never would say that you take the self completely away. There's always a self. There's always some sense of I, except in some rare moments, which we acknowledge. But in general, in our everyday life, in our human life, there's always a sense of I. But at the level of hakikat, hope is to live free of those aspects of the self that lead to negativity, that including fear and blame, judgment, that lead to the wrong kind of self-consciousness, doubt, withholding. All of those aspects of the self that obscure and get in the way of the reflection of divine intelligence, which should be coming through every human being, breath by breath. To live so that Ar-Rahman, the infinite compassion, is seated on the throne of your heart. That is hope at the level of hakikat, at the level of reality. Now, Mevlana has said all this, I think, in this little passage here. Let's hear it again. Camille, would you read it to us?
The interpretation of a sacred text is true if it stirs you to hope, activity, and awe. And if it makes you slacken your service, know the real truth to be this, that it's a distortion of the sense of the saying, not a true interpretation. This saying has come down to inspire you to serve, that God may take the hands of those who have lost hope and deliver them. Ask the meaning of the Quran from the Quran alone, and from that one who has set fire to his idle fancy and extinguished it, and has become a sacrifice to the Quran, bowing low in humbleness, so that the Quran has become the essence of his spirit. That essential oil that has wholly devoted itself to the rose. You can smell either that oil or the rose, as you please.
This is teaching at the level of hakikat and tarikat, but especially hakikat. What an extraordinary thing. I want to hear from you. I want to hear what you think, but I'm so excited. I want to say something here. Imagine what it's like if a human being becomes the essence of that revelation, so that it's no longer primarily something external, some set of beliefs, or even less, some set of prescriptions and rules. Though we have nothing against those prescriptions and rules, but that a human being in humbleness has, the Quran has become the essence of that human spirit, just as essential oil takes on the fragrance of the rose. And whether you smell the oil or the rose, it's the same fragrance. we encountered this in our lives through our murshids, through our teachers, who we fell in love with because of that love. And we fell in love with the fragrance of the rose. We didn't fall in love with any beliefs. We didn't fall in love with a doctrine or a dogma or even a religion. We felt the transmission of that comes from the one who has set fire to his idle fancy and extinguished it. The idle fancy of the nafs that says, I'll get around to it tomorrow. Or if only I weren't, you know, didn't have to work so hard, if only I didn't have a family, if only... If only it weren't the 21st century. If only I lived in some traditional society somewhere where I could be spiritual. If only. As if things were different then. So, what do you hear? What touches you in these words?
Makes me think of Muhammad, peace be upon him. I think it's the messenger who was the message as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can see that with the prophets. Jesus was God's word, you know, in the same way that someone is living the word, they become that message. There's no real distinction between the person and the message.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Exactly. You know, when they asked the prophet's wife, Aisha, what is the prophet like? Do you know what she said? She said what you said. She said, well, do you know the Quran? Yeah. He was that. He was just like that. And of course, it's not so simple because what people see in the Quran is also a mirror very often. And as the Quran says of itself, only the pure shall touch it, only the clean shall touch it. So there's something that's required of us to even be able to grasp and perceive its mercy and its generosity. Rumi himself said the Quran is like a shy bride who needs to be courted from a distance. You need to prepare yourself.
And Shama said something similar in that she only lifts her veil when she sees that the land is free of war.
Now just conveniently, the second quote here is from the Quran. I wanted to find a quote from the Quran that was about hope, if hope is addressed. So, this is from, I should have put this in here, it's from Surah 18. And offer them the parable of the life of this world. It's like the water which we send down from the skies and which is absorbed by the plants of the earth. But in time they turn into dry stubble, which the winds blow freely about. And it is God who determines all things. Wealth and children are an adornment in this world's life, in the Hayati Dunya, in the life of this world. But the acts of wholeness and reconciliation, which is how it translates Salahati, but the acts of wholeness and reconciliation, the fruit of which abide forever, are of far greater merit in your sustainer's sight, and a far better source of hope. So, as so often happens, Quran is bringing us really right down to essentials. This is not necessarily a mystical or on its face value, it's not such a mystical assertion. But of course it is. It's reminding us that wealth and children, I mean, and for some cultures, not so much in modern culture today where people are having, are not even replacing the people who are here, but in some cultures people love children and love to have children, and having children is a sign of wealth and productivity, and it's riches to have children and wealth. But that's just an adornment of the world, of this world's life. Zinatu al-hayati dunya. But salahati, those actions, and by the way, you know, a phrase repeated again and again and again in the Quran is wa'amanu wa'amalu salahati. Those who wa'amanu, those who keep the faith, wa'amalu as-salahati, those who, and they translate it as do righteous deeds, which is already, even for starters, it's a kind of a cliche, because of course everybody wants to do righteous deeds. But what is amalu as-salahati? Those who do the work, because amalu implies work, amal is work, amalu as-salahati, and the word salahati means that in Hebrew, sulha is really important. Event, and today there are Sufis and Jews coming together for sulha, which is ceremonies of reconciliation, of peace. Sulha in Hebrew is salahati, the actions that bring reconciliation and peace and wholeness, that heal this fractured world and these fractured relationships. It's better to do this for the sake of hope. This is a better foundation for hope. And once again, we're back to hope, not as I'm just going to hope in a sentimental way that it's all going to work out. I'm going to hope that God loves me. I'm going to hope that I won't be punished, I'll go to heaven. I'm going to hope that etc., etc. But no, this is saying act. This is what needs to be done. The acts of wholeness and reconciliation. And then it says, the fruit of which abide forever. Those acts create something that your wealth and even your children do not. As precious as our children are, these acts of reconciliation, of healing, they are eternal because they are of a spiritual substance. They are an outer action, but the reality is on a spiritual level. And how beautiful it is in Arabic. It's good to be able to, if you bear with my not very good pronunciation of Arabic, I don't see anybody here. Was probably the native Arab speaker. Maybe somebody can do it better than I, but give me a chance. Al-malu wa al-banuna zinatu al-hayata dunya wa al-baqiyatu as-salihatu khayran inda rabbika thawaban wa khayran amalan. I love this word, baqi, on the second line, wa al-baqiyatu as-salihatu. Because baqi is the word that's used in conjunction with fana, fana and baqa. Fana is the annihilation of the false self, the dissolving of the self in God, and baqa is what abides after that false self has dissolved. So here we have this beautiful word, baqi, And actually they call this, they use this as a name for cemeteries too.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bhakti Saram Cemetery in Konya, where so many of our beloveds are buried, it means that which abides. And so this Salihat Bhakti abide, they're abiding, they're eternal, they're timeless. And then it says, Hairun Indarabhika. Indarabhika means, it literally means with God, or with your Lord, with your sustainer. This Inda, it means, some translated as in God's sight, but really it is with God, in the divine, in the reality of the divine, Salahati is far better hope than all the worldly stuff we pay attention to. So that's it. This, we have a world, no matter whatever we do in this world, we're going to see it, if we're around long enough, we're going to see it fade, we're going to see it turn into stubble and dust. Those of us who are slightly old enough to have witnessed that, everybody's old enough, actually, everybody in this room is old enough to have witnessed that to some extent, but some of us have witnessed it more than others. Even your most beautiful accomplishments, you know, your book's going to go out of print, your house is going to fall into disrepair, unless you're constantly doing, you know, working on it, maintaining it. Your body, you do your best, but gravity will eventually take over. That's the nature of everything in the dunya, in the world. You young, dearly beloved young people, I hope this is not discouraging anybody. This is supposed to be a message of hope, a message of beauty.
Because everything's perishing except
everything is
face.
Perishing but the face of God.
Right.
Believe me, if this sounds grim, if anything we're saying tonight sounds grim and negative, you know, compared to everything else, no, this is the most positive message. It's the rest that is, as some people say, is the spiritual path difficult. And you want to say, well, compared to what? No, it's the easiest. The spiritual path is the easiest way, if the truth be known. Everything else is more difficult than the spiritual path because of the price you pay, because of what it costs you, because it doesn't have that abiding reality, that generous and conscious acts and intentions will have, and which will prove themselves in the long run in your hearts to be something you cherish.
It reminds me of a moment in the life of the prophet when someone had given him and Aisha part of a sheep, and people came by and he kept giving out pieces of it to whoever came because they were in more need. And finally, the only piece that was left in the house was the neck. And Aisha said, "Oh, you know, Prophet of God, now we only have the neck left." And he said, "Ah, that's the only part we don't have because we kept it."
That's what a prophet is. There's another story of a prophet that confirms that, and it's the story of Moses and how Moses left his flock of 100 sheep to go and find one that was lost. And he searched and he searched and he searched, and with great distress and and sacrifice and difficulty. He was searching for this one sheep, and he got exhausted, and finally he found the sheep, the lamb. And the lamb had gotten into some bad situation. You know, it was stuck somewhere, and it would have died if Moses hadn't tracked it down. And the poor lamb was in really bad shape, and Moses speaks to the lamb and says, I don't mind that you did this to me, but why would you do it to yourself? And then a voice spoke and said, now, Moses, you are a prophet. So the theme, which is on the welcome page of Sufism.org, it's every month a new theme appears magically there, and so that's this month's theme: the interpretation of the sacred text is true. If it stirs you to hope, activity, and awe. And I wanted to suggest a practical activity that is in alignment with this idea of hope. And it's just a suggestion which maybe some of you might want to take, because the kind of hope we're talking about is hope that involves action. And the action I want to suggest is this, that whatever your spiritual practice, whatever it is you're doing, that you take it up a notch and enjoy it more. You strengthen your practice and appreciate it, be thankful for it, take pleasure in it. And we can talk about that next week. We'll be here next week. The week after, we will be away the next 2 weeks from tonight. Any further thoughts? Anything anybody wants to share about what we've been reading, talking about?
To mind about hope, because I find it quite a difficult thing as well. It's rather religious in a way, but is never despair of the divine mercy, mm-hmm. and the whole movement is from him to mm-hmm. him. So it seems this sense of hope here seems to be like entering mm-hmm. that flow or that
yeah.
movement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Clearly, mm-hmm. yes.
Mm-hmm. Allowing that in you.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it's offering us a key that we could even misuse that idea of flowing from the divine to the divine if we didn't grasp the possibility of activation in that flow. Mm-hmm. And the subtle understanding of what that activation means is not that it's a willful, you know, sort of grunting effort. It may sometimes be, but that activation is willed from within ourselves. And at the same time, that will, when it arises, arises from something deeper. But it's almost as if, you know, like we have a faucet or something in ourselves. We're not responsible for the water pressure, the Metropolitan Water Service takes care of that, but still somebody has to turn the faucet for the fountain to flow. And often we don't. Because we're preoccupied, in other words. And to grasp that, you know, probably everybody in this room is reading some kind of spiritual text, some source of spiritual knowledge on a fairly frequent basis. And yet, do we merely consume it, like chewing gum for the brain? Worse yet, chewing gum for the thinking mind, mental apparatus? Or do we see it as an opportunity to awaken something, to awaken hope, activity, and that funny word I can't translate, which is charm. That humility before the divine. That sense of kind of bashfulness and awe. Well, the rest is up to us.